Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us today. My very special guest today is Lee McCormick, and we're going to be talking about the Heart Reconnection Guidebook. Born into a tribe of movers and shakers, Lee McCormick has always lived out loud. He is the founder of the Integrative Life Center in Nashville, the Ranch Recovery Center in Tennessee, in the Canyon Treatment Center in Malibu, California, and has been a creative force in the mental health and recovery scene for more than 20 years. He founded Spirit Recovery, Inc. to produce healing and recovery conferences and spiritual journeys around the world. He is also co-founder of the Front Porch Partners, a counseling, management, and research development company working in the medical and behavioral health disciplines. Lee has authored the Spirit Recovery Meditation Journal to assist people in reclaiming their lives and is also the co-author of Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag with HCI Books. Lee is the executive producer and has had a leading role in the documentary Dreaming Heaven, the true story of the experiences of 18 people over 5 days at Tihuacan, Mexico, and has led many journeys to this place of power. For more information, you can visit his website, which is www.spiritrecovery.com, or you can also visit www.integrativelifecenter.com. I have links to both websites in the show page description. And again, today we're here to talk about the new book, Heart Reconnection Guidebook. Hello, Lee. Thanks for joining me.
Hey, Robert. It's good to talk to you again, man.
It's been my pleasure, and it is hard to believe that it was 4 years ago we did the Spirit Recovery Medicine Bag. I can remember that conversation to this day because I had several people contacting me afterwards about your work and really following up with you. So it really made a difference.
Yeah, well, cool. That's nice to hear.
Yeah, it was great. I liked it. Not everybody responds, you know. So when I get one, I know that's definitely, you know, made ripples out there. So this book, okay, now this book is different than your others. I mean, this one is a compilation book with other co-writers. So can you tell us a little bit about how it came about and a little bit about the other writers who contributed as well?
Yeah, you bet. Well, it came about in Santa Fe. I was at a conference, U.S. Journal Conferences, which is a sister company to Health Communications, who is our publisher. And I do several mental health addiction conferences during the year. We were all at the Santa Fe conference, and my good friend Gary Seidler, who is one of the founders of Health Communications and U.S. Journal, Mary Faulkner, one of the co-writers in the book. Mary's the principal writer in the book, I guess. Myself, Joan Borisenko, who Joni's pretty well known. She's a PhD psychologist and was a teacher at Harvard and has been working in the medical and behavioral health realm for, years and years. And Will Tagle, who's a PhD psychologist in the Hill Country in Texas. And Holly Cook. Holly and I work together at the Integrative Life Center in Nashville. It's our mental health and addictions recovery program. You know, we were all sitting around talking, and all of us of course, have years of experience. I've got 20 years experience working in the healing business, the mental health addictions business. And I had the idea between all of us that, you know, we have such an expansive point of view. We have so much personal experience. We've all really developed our own unique relationship with this work, and it might be really interesting if we could get together and co-create a book that represents the merging of our points of view and our experiences and the things that we found that that really impact and help people connect on this, you know, this personal healing journey. And that's how the book came about. It you know, the idea is the fun part, and then you have to work at it. It took about 3 years.
Yeah,
it took about three years.
You know, working with one, you know, co-author can be challenging sometimes, but to have five or six, basically six people involved, that can be a daunting task from just from a writer and editor's perspective.
Yeah, it can be, and, you know, there's a lot of going back and forth. Mary and I were the primary, I guess we wrote 80% of the book. And then, you know, I use the dialogues and the conversations and the just the back and forth, because that whole group, all of us that created this together, we're all good friends. And we have those kind of conversations when we're hanging out together. You know, the question really has been the mental health addictions work and the drug and alcohol mental health treatment business for all of the new modalities, all of the research, all of the evidence-based stuff. We have not really drastically improved the outcomes since the inception of the business, you know, in the 70s. And that's always bugged me. You know, it's like, okay, this industry, if you want to call it an industry, this mm-hmm. realm has existed for 50 years. And why over 50 years have we not gotten to where we're 70 or 80% successful with clients coming into treatment as opposed to, you know, 20 or 30% successful? And I've never been willing to just accept, well, you know, the disease is so powerful or addiction is so powerful or people don't really want to change. I was like, no, that's a cop-out. The truth is we're not asking the right questions, or we're missing something profoundly important in how we approach this work with people. You know, and that's what motivates me is people are showing up. They're asking for help. They're looking to clean their life up, to be happy, to be free. And it's not just, of course, the Heart Reconnection guidebook is not just about recovery. It's about being human and feeling stuck or having a pattern of behavior or a belief system that sabotages you, or, you know, just realizing, you know what, I'm not really that happy and I can't figure out why. And so how can we unravel our life? How can we look in the mirror with ourselves and question, you know, what do we question? How do we question ourselves from a point of view that's going to support us in moving beyond whatever is in our way? You know, and it really doesn't matter whether it's an eating disorder, whether it's depression, whether it's just frustration or anxiety or loneliness or heartbreak or trauma. All of these human conditions, to me, all of our suffering is really an invitation from life to pay attention. You know, if you take the judgment out of it or the victim mentality out of it, it's like suffering is always about, okay, well, would you like to pay attention to this? Because you actually probably already hold a key to addressing it, or hold the key to finding the way to address it, if you're just willing to step into it and take responsibility for yourself.
Yeah, yeah. That's where, you know, I love the fact that you, you know, found that a low success rate really isn't, could be questioned, should be questioned, you know, and it seems that, you know, the basis of a lot of what you're talking about now is doing that questioning, not only from the professional's standpoint, but also from the individual who is, you know, experiencing those drawbacks, those challenges that that may be a particular approach, you know, doesn't work for them, that they really kind of need to do that inward search is to find out some causality and then find a way to fix it, you know, rather than try and fix it and hope that it hits the cause.
Yeah, you bet. And, you know, in our culture is not really geared toward questioning itself. You know, like we have all the dialogue down that we're the greatest and we're the best, and you know, we excel at all these things and we're all so wonderful and it's the most amazing place to live. And a lot of that's true, and at the same time our culture has a lot of issues. You know, and we're programmed by our culture. We're taught that if we want to be happy, that we need to subscribe to the beliefs and the values and the tenets of what good looks like. And if we'll do all the things that we're told we should do by the authority figures in our lives, if we do all those things and work hard and do it correctly, that we'll just land at happiness. And it's really not that simple, because our authenticity, like the truth of who are you really, you know, underneath all of the stories that you inherited, the legacy you inherited, you know, the imprint of family, of religion, of neighborhood, all of that stuff is like a script that we're born into. And it may or may not actually have anything to do with the truth of who we really are. And we are taught growing up that we are, you know, that who we are is an extension of our family. And then to a degree that is true. And also to a degree we're each unique individuals. And life for me after all these years has come to be the opportunity to really take all that stuff apart and question ourselves from a place of authenticity, not from a place of judgment. It's not about being right or wrong or good or bad. It's about, okay, who am I really? Am I really comfortable in my skin? Am I really my story, or am I the one that's believing the story? You know, am I really the sum of my experiences in life, or am I just the one who's lived those experiences and is carrying them around? You know, carrying the energy of that around with me.
Yeah, you know, very much so. You know, and the idea of, you know, questioning our authenticity based on, you know, what we've been taught, or, you know, the socialization and all that. You know, it's real important, it seems, to, you know, as we get older, to be able to begin to distinguish, you know, whether that whether what I was taught to be is exactly who I am, and then like you said, the judgment aspect, you know, if I am not what I was taught, am I bad, you know, because I'm not. So, you know, and that judgment can really be a showstopper for many people.
Well, it can, and you know, and it haunts us. It really haunts us. So it's so interesting because there's so many levels to this. You know, I love the family that I was born into, and it was a big, powerful, dynamic family and some big, powerful personalities. And I really loved everybody. But, you know, when I was a kid growing up, I remember I felt like I had landed on the wrong planet, you know, as a little kid. Like, okay, I love all these people. I didn't know any different, but I also never felt like I really fit in. And I run into that a lot. you know, some people do. Some people are born into families and they just, from the get-go, they totally fit in, and a lot of us don't. And it's all fine. It's all good. It all is what it is. And for those who were never really comfortable with the reality that they were born into and the legacy that they inherited, there's nowhere in our culture that says, okay, well, if these things don't fit for you, you know, what you are is not, what you are is an aspect of the mystery. Like, you're an expression of God, if you want to use that language. Where we come from, we don't really know. Where we go when we leave here, we don't really know. We're an expression of life, and each of us is unique, and each of us inherits this script and inherits all this stuff. And are we the inheritance, or are we the one that's living with the inheritance, right? You know, I'm not my story. I'm the one that lived that story. And for a lot of my life, I identified myself as my story, and I judged myself by my story, and, you know, I judged the world according to my story. And then somewhere along the line of all the things that I've done, I started having the experience, well, wait a minute, it's just a story. And I'm so enmeshed in it that I don't know who I am apart from what I believe. You know, and there's a me that the true me is in here somewhere, but there's so many layers of stuff on top of it that, you know, I don't know where I begin and the story ends, or the story ends and I begin. And that's really the journey. And the truth is always in our heart. You know, and I don't mean sentimental, emotional heart. The truth is always in our soul. You know, the truth of who we are is always with us, regardless of what happens. We just tend to lose relationship with that aspect of ourselves because we're so busy trying to be good enough for the world.
Yeah, very much. Now this book, the Heart Connection Guidebook, what makes it a guidebook? You know, what is the distinction between a regular book, and a guidebook, and the heart connection, reconnection aspect?
The book actually, it opens up by reflecting on a timeline of the way humans have lived. You know, that a couple thousand years ago, the majority of cultures on the planet were really more aligned with the feminine. You know, it was aligned with the mother, as opposed to a masculine orientation of creator or God. The creator aspect was a feminine aspect. And as the book opens, it moves into reflections and questions, and awarenesses of our legacy as human beings, of our legacy in healing. And also out of that, there is a whole series of questions that come up. And so as a guidebook, it introduces the reader into a process of self-reflection. Of course, you can do it all, and it really is designed to be done individually and or as a group, because there's always a power, you know, to reflecting out and reflecting on life and reflecting on ourselves as a part of a group. But the book literally has practices in it. It has tools in it. It has suggestions in it to help each individual begin that process of becoming aware again of, you know, what's really the truth in the heart. Like, what do I, if I knew I was going to live 24 more months and that was it, what would I want to do with that time? What would I, you know, what would I really value? The book is also laid out in a medicine wheel, which means, you know, this journey of life, when you've lived, I don't know, 40, 50, 60, 70 years old, the longer you're around, the longer I think you realize that life runs in big circles. You know, things come back around again. And so the awakening path, the healing path, the recovery path, all of those journeys of life, things come back around again. So if you begin in the East with a reflection on yourself as a child and the experiences of a child, as you work around to the values of the South and the values of the West, the values of the North, if I start that journey with myself today and I work around through this over the next 6 months or the next year, when I come back around a year from now, I'm a different version of me. You know, and our point of view on ourselves and our point of view on life is, if we're really actively engaged in living life, our point of view is continuously shifting, you know, and our beliefs change a little bit here and there. And our evolution in life is continuously moving, you know. So to come into a healing or an awakening practice from the point of view of it being cyclical or circular rather than linear allows us the opportunity to revisit ourselves over and over again as we work through our story or as we work through our challenges. That's why we use the medicine wheel, which is, you know, and gosh, they exist all over the world. It's an ancient way of approaching the journey.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, it's true that our, you know, as we go through life, our perspectives and, like you said, and beliefs to a degree shift. And a lot of times it is those perspectives are guided or influenced by circumstances from outside ourselves, you know, whereas it sounds like, you know, going through the medicine wheel format, it's kind of taking a proactive direction in guiding that you know, that progression as we go along, and you know, where we can actually create, you know, what it is that we want to see, you know, and also reflecting, you know, back and seeing how successful we had been in the, you know, previous cycle, you know, to achieving that.
Yeah, you bet. And it is a journey. You know, when and a part of the heart reconnection work is really shifting our point of view out of a point of view of judgment and to a point of view of simply cause and effect. You know, I don't need to make something wrong to realize that it's no longer serving me. It's just, you know, I don't want to do this way anymore. I don't want to be in this relationship anymore. And you don't have to be wrong or bad because I want to go do something different. You know, and so often we get stuck in that trap of, you know, I have to get mad before I can say no. You know, and because we're not necessarily in our culture raised to honor and respect ourselves and honor and respect the dreams or the integrity of our heart. We're really, a lot of us were taught that in order to be good enough, we needed to be compliant with cultural beliefs or religious beliefs first, as though we're not good enough simply on the day we're born and that goodness must be earned, which is a real setup. You know, it's not true. You know, we're born with innate value. We're going to die with innate value. And the journey is just, what are you going to do with your time on earth? In my opinion, my point of view. So it's not a matter of me needing to earn value. It's a matter of me coming to learn and determine respect and for myself and respect for others. And then, what do I want to express in this lifetime of mine? What do I want to do with my life?
You know, I was going to say, so, you know, I mean, when it comes to, you know, beliefs and faith, how do they connect or how do they fit in with that heart reconnection work or approach?
You know, when we one of the biggest gifts in this, again, and I'll say it again, is to shift our approach with to ourselves and to our life away from judgment and simply to it's life is really just cause and effect. You know, it's the mind of man that is so that's so obsessed with this idea of judging. You know, there's no other animal on the planet that wakes that judges the other animals in the herd all the time, or judges themselves. You know, I mean, I've been a rancher all my life, so I've lived around horses and cattle all my life, and I've never seen one cow look at another one and saying, "Well, you know, you gained a few pounds there, honey." You know, and animals never wake up in the morning and they're confused about who they are and what are they going to do with their life. You know, they're just, they're like living, reacting, responding. And to shift our attention away from living based in judgment to living in acceptance and awareness, you could say living from love rather than living from fear. It offers us an opportunity to make peace with our mind so that those voices in our head that are barking all that judgment and that are cringing at the fear or responding or reacting out of fear to not being good enough or, you know, not living up to expectations, we can come to realize that we're actually doing that to ourselves. I mean, that's me doing that to me. Right? Because I'm the one that's listening to those voices and giving them my attention and believing them. There are a lot of voices in our head. We all have voices in our head, but we're not the voices in our head. We're the one that's hearing them, right? If you're the voices in your head, then who's listening?
Right, right.
You know, so it's an opportunity to, in the heart reconnection work, to shift the frame of how we look at ourselves first and then look at the world. And then, you know, you could say it's kind of like we have an opportunity from what the book is offering to stand down from living odds with our own heart and soul and spirit and make peace with ourselves, make peace with our mind. Our mind is an amazing tool, but our mind makes a terrible boss. You know, the mind is creative. The mind holds all this knowledge. It holds tons of information. It processes information. It dreams. It dreams up things. And honestly, it's easy for us to end up living like a master or a servant to our mind and to the beliefs that we hold in our mind, when the truth is, my mind is not responsible for me. I'm responsible for my relationship with my thoughts and my beliefs. I created my beliefs. You know, we create our belief system, and then we expect our belief system to be right and make us good enough. It's kind of crazy. You know, it's like a painter painting a painter paints a magnificent painting, hangs it up on the wall, and then makes the painting their value in life and ends up worshiping the painting the way we end up worshiping our belief system. Instead of saying, yeah. Oh, wait a minute, my painting, the painting's not responsible for me. My beliefs are not responsible for me. I'm responsible for the relationship I live with my beliefs. And you see that in the world around us all the time. You know?
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
It creates so much conflict. And, you know, for us humans, I mean, one of the craziest things about us is that we're willing to kill each other over our stories about God. I mean, that's nuts, because your story of God and my story of God are two different stories. I'm so desperate to be right that I'm willing to go to war with you over a story. But guys, it's just a story. Relax.
I know. You know, and the thing is, you know, that mental back and forth with judgment, as well as you know, the internal as well as the external conflict, it's exhausting. I mean, it really drains people, I think, you know, and really, takes away from, you know, having a happy day or a happy week, a happy year life, you know, and it just seems so counterproductive for the individual.
Well, of course it is. And it, you know, it's a distraction. You know, the point really is, are we even aware that that's what we're doing? Like, are we aware that, you know, I'm going to engage with you on the basis of what, like, if you're a Muslim, I'm going to engage with you on the basis of what I happen to believe about Muslim means. And I never meet you as an individual human being because I'm already projecting onto you what I happen to believe about your religious affiliation. So from the heart reconnection level, it would be, look, you're one unique individual meeting another unique individual, and you both have beliefs, and you both have, belief systems or religions you're aligned with, or educations or roles that you play in your life, fathers, authors, workers, whatever. We have all of these affiliations. And what tends to happen is that we judge one another and we meet one another based on the beliefs that we hold about what we think we know about one another. How often do we actually really meet someone from a point of view of, you know what, I don't know anything about you, and I'd be interested to get to know who you really are. You know, look at the political system. Mm-hmm. It's like, there's no unique individuals. They're all either Democrats or Republicans. It's like, well, none of that's actually true. I mean, the truth is there's no such thing. There is a whole bunch of human beings who are identifying by, you know, particular mythologies or particular doctrines, and they've given the doctrine and the mythology, they've made it more important than the heart and soul of each other as human beings. And I don't know, to me, that's an insanity.
It is crazy, and it's playing out right before us. And, you know, and the truth is that, you know, the beliefs of either party are questionable. I mean, you know, they seem to be very fluid, depending on, you know, the time of day or the day of the week. But, you know, we as individuals, you know, we may resonate with various various ideas put forth from either, you know. So I mean, it's kind of like, you know, we are a mix of beliefs espoused, and again, you know, they're fluid. So I mean, even the fact that we can say I believe this part, you know, the Democratic position on this and this and that, and Republican on that. I mean, you know, we've seen right now where Republicans had one particular belief for 7 or 8 years, and now they're just flipping, you know, real quick. So, I mean, and it can happen on both sides. But the idea is that, you know, the beliefs that they espouse are not even set, you know. So, you know, to identify with a particular orientation or group whose values are fluid, I mean, that just seems, ridiculous. You know, the idea is we should really be focusing on what our beliefs are and resonating, you know, and aligning with those.
Yeah, I agree with you. To me, it comes down to what's actually of true importance here. You know, like what's the first value here? And the first value for me, if you take all the religions in the world, the first precedent or the first value is a respect for life, right? Life is sacred.
Right.
Beliefs are not sacred. Beliefs are made up. But and we flip the script that we value life itself. We value respect for ourselves and respect for each other less than we value titles and roles and materialism. And it's as though the scripts of the mind, the stories that we are downloaded with and then that we perpetuate ourselves in our mind, our allegiances, our alliances, our affiliations, there's such fear in how we have been programmed as human beings that, you know, we cling to these stories and these ideologies, though they ultimately can keep us safe. And they're all imaginary. So, you know, you can tell me what a particular religious affiliation means, but you can't show it to me. It's a theory. Like, you know, show me Catholicism. Well, I can show you how the energy of those beliefs is expressed in, you know, in a church or in a mass or in an individual who says, I'm Catholic. But the truth is you can't. It's etheric. It's a human imagining, right? And in heart reconnection work, in the heart reconnection point of view, it's bringing it all back down to the first precedent in our life can be our respect for life itself. And that, you know what, no matter what else we do, we don't go against that. Right. Your need to be right. If your need to be right is greater than your respect for life, well, then you create what we're looking at and what we're dealing with here, that people are willing to kill each other over the madness of their own belief systems when their belief systems are actually not even real.
Yeah.
I mean, look at an individual that gets Alzheimer's. Their entire belief system goes away. And there's still a human spirit in that body. But it has no operating program any longer. It's like a computer that the hard drive's been wiped clean. That human being doesn't have less value than you or I or anyone else. They just don't have an operating program anymore. You know, so how real was everything that individual actually believed? Their whole life that they based their life on. How real was it? And ultimately, you know, in a sense, how really important was it as far as being willing to fight over it or judge over it, or kill over it. So you come back to the heart. Well, the heart says this human being has no operating system and they're still a human being and they're still to be respected and to taken care of. And that's what's really important, you know, is our respect for life. And so bringing the attention and the connection work back to self-respect, you know, back to recovering faith in ourselves and who we were created to be, rather than all the judgment that we hold against ourselves based on how we've been programmed by the world to judge ourselves according to the measures of the world.
Yeah, I agree. I just self-published a book called The Heart and Soul of Caring, and there were stories from individuals who are caregivers, and many of the stories dealt with, you know, parents or in-laws who had dementia or Alzheimer's. And you know, you're correct, you know, that operating system is gone, but it does seem that things, the interactions and the relationships all go back to that heart center, that love connection, creating, you know, what they do remember usually will be those love connections, those loving experiences that, you know, made a mark on them. I mean, so much so that the, you know, regardless of the operating system, they were still there, you know, to be expressed. And quite often, you know, those people who are going through that challenge will live their day, you know, very reactionary in a way. I mean, you know, in the sense of, you know, what happens, you know, whether you you provide love and support and their smile and reaction, or if you do something that they don't like, there's going to be an angry response. So, I mean, it's just very basic. You know, and I think, you know, that's what seems to last and go beyond, you know, our life experience. But I think we can learn so much from people who are experiencing that challenge. And the caregivers, even though they had challenges, I mean, some really difficult physical challenges with some. Every single one came out saying that they were a better, more compassionate person because of that experience.
Yeah, I would agree. That's great.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's, you know, and if you look at what you're saying about those reactions, if you look at children, young kids, you know, they get mad. They get mad. And 5 minutes later, they're over it. It's over. Well, an adult, because we adults are so enmeshed in judgment, we get mad about something. We may stay mad for 20 years, you know, over something that happened. That long, we don't let it go because the moment we judge one of our experiences, that judgment tends to lock that energy in place. You know, it's like in a resin. Judgment hardens the energy of the experience or the emotion, and then it becomes what, you know, what we call baggage in our life, and we carry it around until we come back and revisit it and make the decision to then let that go. You know,
yeah.
Like enough. Okay. You let it go. So it is interesting.
Yeah, it is.
I don't know.
Now,
your
work, you know, in the mental health and in the addiction area, how does heart reconnection approach, you know, for people out there who now are either having to deal with mental health or addiction issues, or for people in their lives who are, you know, how does the heart reconnection approach help those with that kind of challenge?
Well, it brings the focus and the attention back to, like, if I'm the one struggling, it brings responsibility for myself back to me. And again, not from a place of judgment, but from the fact that I am the one that's 100% responsible for how I choose to respond to the situations in my life. You know, you may do something to anger me, but I'm 100% responsible for where I go with that anger. You know, doing the addictions work, addiction is just an energetic pattern. I mean, it has a physiological aspect to it. It has an emotional, an intellectual aspect to it. And the truth is, an addictive pattern ends up being created because we respond in situations the same way over and over and over. And it takes quite a bit of time, actually, typically, to develop a true addiction. So in the heart reconnection work, it's bringing a broader awareness, for instance, what I just said, that an addiction is an energetic pattern. And in order to shift out of that pattern, then we approach that pattern first from awareness of acknowledging that it's real and that it exists, not unlike the first step in the 12 steps. And then there's a series of practices that you can participate in with yourself, for yourself, or with a group, that help you come to a greater awareness and practices in intervening on those patterns. You know, I mean, actually, it's a great example. The 12-step world and the 12-step meetings, 12-step community, when you choose to go to a meeting instead of going to the bar, you're breaking that pattern of action reaction, that something triggers me, or I'm happy, or I'm sad, or whatever it is that would provoke you to go out and use drugs or alcohol. And instead of continuing to live that pattern, you're shifting yourself out of that pattern and you're going to a meeting, right? You're intervening on that energetic loop in your life. And I tell people, I think this is in the book, I'm not positive, I do this stuff so much, but one of the things that I do with people is I'll tell them, you know what, if you want to have an interesting experience with yourself, change all your patterns for a week. Drive a different way to work every day. And don't drive the same way home that you drove to work. Break it up. Go to a different grocery store this week. Go to a different dry cleaners, right? Go to the other side of town to go out to eat. Like, really break all your patterns for 1 week and see what happens. You know, it's, we become so habituated that, and then we start feeling, you know, I'm bored, or my life's not that interesting, or I'm tired, or I'm exhausted after work. Well, it's like, well, you're not really engaging in life. We're such creatures of habit that we end up following the same patterns over and over again, and then it becomes for years, and then we wonder why we're not inspired or nothing seems that interesting. It's like, well, change what you're doing. Break that energy up, and all of a sudden you free up a whole lot of energy, and you become aware again, and things are interesting, and you're paying attention when you're driving through a different neighborhood or a different part of town because it's not all so familiar. You know, so part of this work is the opportunity to challenge ourselves in that way. And in addiction, in mental health, and there is, of course, a whole aspect of mental health issues that's organic. So it can be literal brain chemistry imbalances. Well, there's opportunities to address those imbalances from an organic standpoint, an organic supplemental standpoint with amino acids and nutraceuticals as opposed to synthetic pharmaceutical drugs. So there's always more than one way to approach any given situation. And the heart reconnection work in relation to addiction recovery is a different point of view to approach the same type challenges. And every time we can find a new point of view, we can bring a different light to it. There's more to be discovered. They say in the rooms, and more will be revealed. Well, more can't be revealed if we find one way of doing it that suits us, and then we lock the doors and the windows, and that's the only way we're going to do it. You know, I'm only going to do this one way because this has worked for me. Well, there's a greater opportunity available to us than that.
Yeah, it's funny when we talk about doing things differently, and I am directionally dysfunctional. I get lost very easily, and it used to frustrate me truly. I mean, I used to get so angry at myself, judging myself, you know, being angry, and then I just, you know, after, you know, doing that soul searching, it was just like, well, you know, it is what it is. Just, you know, go with it. And ever since then, whenever that happens, it's like, okay, I'm going to take a different route. I'll be going, you know, I'll be seeing different things. And just by having that perspective of, you know, rather than chastise myself and rather look at it as an opportunity to do something different or to, you know, take a different route, it really shifts the experience. I mean, now some people riding with me might get frustrated, but I'm going along for the ride. So.
Well, sure, man. It makes an adventure out of it, you know? I mean, in that work, like, I can tell my wife that. Oh, I'm not lost. I'm just going a different way.
Exactly. It's like we're here to have some fun. One of the things that is mentioned in the book is the idea of the gifts of suffering. You know, I'm sure some people who are out there suffering right now or feel that they're suffering wouldn't look at it as a gift. So can you maybe shed some light on that idea, that the gift of
suffering?
Yeah,
you bet. Yeah, that's actually, I actually contributed that section. You know, and of course there's as many different relationships with suffering as there are people living with it. What I'm speaking to with that is that in my life, when I was, because I lived with an addiction for many years, and there was a lot of suffering that came about, you know, as a result of me living that pattern of behavior for 20 years. And what I came to realize is that all that chaos, all that heartbreak, all that literal physical suffering, that the whole time, if I had chosen to look at that from this maybe as asking me would I like to pay attention instead of, well, it's just the downside of what I did, right? That suffering actually is an invitation to give your attention to what's the source of this, what's the cause of this, and how can I take responsibility for this experience existing in my life in a way that either one comes to resolve the issue, address the issue, take responsibility for my half of or my part of the relationship with that issue and learn from it, or it be a motivator to learn to outgrow it. Now, my wife, for instance, my wife had Crohn's disease, and she was really, really sick. She ended up going to the gastrointestinal specialty department at a major university hospital, and they offered her a whole array of pharmaceutical drugs. Well, she went home and read about all the pharmaceutical drugs and realized that the majority of those drugs over a 10-year period caused far worse problems than what the Crohn's ultimately caused, right? So the cure, the supposed cure was actually worse than the disease. So she took responsibility for her situation and started doing research and actually found a healer who worked with autoimmune diseases and with Crohn's from the standpoint of diet and Chinese medicine. And she completely healed her Crohn's over a 3-year period.
Wow.
By completely changing her diet and completely changing, like, she didn't drink sodas anymore. You know, she eliminated all the things that aggravated her suffering. And she found people that had suggestions around how to address it proactively, and she completely healed the Crohn's. You know, her suffering was really an invitation to pay attention, and she chose to pay attention rather than just take a pill and live in relationship with that suffering. You know, so suffering can actually become an ally in our life if we can find the connection to it that supports us in raising ourselves up because of it, rather than casting ourselves in a victim's role because of it.
Oh yeah, that makes perfect sense, and good for her for not just following the prescribed course of action and finding her own way. Now we're getting down toward the end of the show, so there's just one more topic that I kind of want to touch on before we go, and that is journaling. A lot of people I know from the listeners who have kind of talked to me about shows I've had on journaling and that kind of thing do journaling. So can you talk about a little bit just about journaling from the heart reconnection perspective? I mean, I think it seems like knocking out judgment would be a big part of that.
Yeah, you bet, man. Journaling, the aspect of journaling that I really love in the work that I do is that our journaling, if you journal every evening on a daily basis and you journal your experiences of that day, you begin when you woke up in the morning, and it could just be a list. You don't have to be a writer. And you just simply identify. At our Integrative Life Center in Nashville, the recovery program that I'm CEO of, which is a fantastic program, it's integrativelifecenter.com. At the Integrative Life Center, we do a journaling practice with all the clients while they're with us, and then most of them do it when they go home. But you make note, beginning first thing in the morning in your journal, of the experiences that you had during that day that stand out for you. So you're making note of, the positives, the aha moments, the great things that happened, but you also make note of the challenges, the places you got real judgmental or angry or scared. So you're recapitulating your day at the end of each day, and you're journaling what those experiences were simply for the awareness of realizing what you gave your attention to during this day that you just lived. And what that does over time, the ability to be a witness to yourself in your life, so that rather than being like all caught up in the chaos day in and day out and the reactions day in and day out, you begin to realize that I am the witness to what I'm doing, and that in each moment I have a choice in how I respond to whatever's going on, whether it's wonderful or whether it's terrible, that I have a power and a responsibility and a choice in how I respond and how I exercise that responsibility. It really determines the quality of what I take away from that day and the quality of the experience that I'm living. And see, again, yeah, you're moving away from judging it. It's not like you're making a list of all the good things that happened and all the bad things that happened and, you know, mm-hmm, I'm going to keep an inventory of right and wrong and good and bad. No, I'm just looking at it from cause and effect, right?
Great.
And it's really powerful.
That sounds like a very healthy approach, you know, and you know, it's a great way for people to journal, you know, effectively without that judgment. Well, we're down to the end of the show, Lee. So one last thing: what is it that you hope that the readers are going to take away from reading the book, and to who do you think the target, you know, who would benefit most from reading the book?
Oh gosh, I think anyone who has any question or conflict or challenge about their life, about their choices, about their identity, their roles, you know, if you're in a place of confusion, you're in a place of fear, you're in a place of conflict, this book can help you sort that out, and help you recover faith in yourself from all the ways that this world tries to get us to believe that we are actually not good enough, just as we are, you know. And that, my hope is that the people that read this book, my real hope is that the people that read this book will be inspired and will get a couple friends together and go through the practices of this book together and share it, because that's where the real power is in sharing these experiences. And it just creates an amazing bond, you know, and it holds us accountable. If you get a half a dozen friends together and decide to work the Heart Reconnection Journal together, then we hold each other accountable to show up, and we serve as mirrors for one another.
Absolutely, absolutely. And, yeah, as far as the target, I think that would be 99.99% of us, if not 100%, you know, that would benefit from it. And again, also for people who are listening who are members of book clubs, this is would be a great book for reading and discussion too. So I want to thank you, Lee, for your time. I really appreciate you chatting with me and talking about the Heart Reconnection. It's a really good tool, and I really want to commend you for putting it together with your friends.
Oh, well, thanks. I really appreciate it. And I don't know, man. There's another one yet to be written, so we'll connect up again in a couple more years.
I know. Well, let's not make it 4 years. No. It'll be what it'll be, but I look forward to that point in time when that happens. So thank you again.
No, you bet. Thank you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You as well. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Lee McCormick. We've been talking about the Heart Reconnection Guidebook, A Guided Journey of Personal Discovery. The book is available at Amazon.com. And again, you can find out more about Lee and his work by visiting the websites of www.spiritrecovery.com or www.integrativelifecenter.com. And again, I do have direct links to both of those websites in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.